श्री शुक उवाच श्री शुकदेव गोस्वामी सेड इत्थम् इन दिस वे सः लॉर्ड हि लॉर्ड कृष्णा नागपत्नीभिः By the wives of Kaliya.
By the wives of Kaliya.
Bhagavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Samavishtutaha. Fully praised. Murchitam.
Who was unconscious.
Bhagna Shirasam.
His head's crushed.
Vissasarja, he let go. He let go. Angri Kutanahai,
by the striking of his feet.
Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, thus praised by, wait a second, we'll do the recitation a little later. Thus praised by the Nagapatnis, the Supreme Personality of God had released the serpent Kaliya, who had fallen unconscious, his heads battered by the striking of the Lord's lotus feet. So you can repeat. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus praised by the Nagapatnis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead released
the serpent Kaliya,
who had fallen unconscious.
His head's battered
by the striking of the Lord's lotus feet. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna, upon reaching his decision, immediately jumped down from Kaliya's hoods and stood before the serpent and his wives. We should remember that when Lord Krishna executed these pastimes, he was just a young village boy in Vrindavan. So this is, the purport is descriptive, so we're just going to go on. And actually the next two verses. Next verse doesn't have a purport, then we'll read text 56 after that. Pratilabdendriya prana kaliya shanakair harim krishrat samuch Vasantina Krishnam Praha Kritan Jalahi. Kaliya slowly regained his vital force and sensory functions. Then, breathing loudly and painfully, the poor servant addressed Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in humble submission. And finally, text 56. Kaliya Uvacha. It just sounds funny. Vayam kala sahopatya tamasa dirgamanyavaha svabhavo dushyajo nata lokanam yad asad grahaha. The serpent Kaliya said, our very birth as a snake has made us envious, ignorant, and constantly angry. Oh my Lord, it is so difficult for people to give up their conditioned nature by which they identify with that which is unreal. So Srila Prabhupada explains, Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that because of his wretched condition, Kaliya was unable to compose original prayers to the Lord, and thus he paraphrased some of the prayers offered by his wives. The word asadgraha indicates that a conditioned soul seizes upon impermanent and impure things such as his own body, the bodies of others, and other countless varieties of material sense objects. The ultimate result of such material attachment is frustration, disappointment, and anguish. A fact that has now become crystal clear to the poor serpent, Kaliya. Poor serpent. He's a fortunate serpent, too. So, Omagada Timidandasha Garanjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Miditam Gena Tismai Shri Gurudevaya Namaha. So, one interesting point about this verse, the final verse we read, is that Kaliya is actually trying to make an excuse for his own enviousness. He's saying, our very birth as a snake, you know, has made us envious. You know, don't blame me, Lord. You know, it's the body you gave me. Hare Krishna, you know, you did it, not me. And isn't it? Basically, envious, proud. It is difficult. And here's another excuse, too. This may sound very familiar for the rest of us, too. It's very difficult for people to give up conditional nature. You know, actually, it reminds me of a time when a devotee made a mistake and Prabhupada said, you know, what did you do, you know? And first of all, he said, you know, I'm a conditioned soul, Prabhupada. Huh? And Prabhupada didn't want to hear that answer. He wanted to hear what the person would do to rectify his mistake. Understand? So, in other words, in the course I teach, because empathic communication, this is called denial. And like denial of responsibility. And you always want to blame someone else, isn't it? You always want to blame someone else for your own problems. You know, and the Christians, what do they say? The devil made me do it. They don't say the body made me do it. Because they think they are the body, so they can't really blame something else. If they said the body made me do it, that would mean they would understand the difference between the soul and the body, right? Implicitly. You understand that logically? Because then they have to blame something else. Because they think they're the body, they can't blame the body. Does that make sense? Because if they blame the body, that means they're blaming themselves. Anyways. It's interesting. So anyway, so Christians say the devil, you know, they have this devil, Satan, who is out there just like, ooh. You know, some competitor to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's making people do all sorts of weird things. Actually, it's interesting. It's like that story also the Prabhupada told about the king asked the sage, you know, why is Maya so strong? You know, sometimes people think Maya's the devil. Maya's not the devil. She's a pure devotee. Anyway, so God has no competitor. So the sage, instead of like answering verbally, he ran up to a pillar and he grabbed the pillar and he said what? Does anyone know the story? Let me go. You know, why is it so good? You know, don't blame Maya if you're being in Maya. You know, we say Maya made me do it. You know, whatever, and the Christians say, Cupid made me do it. All right, so we all have excuses. Or, you know, it's my nature, I'm in ignorance, or I woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, or my blood sugar is low. You know, we got a lot of excuses, isn't it? I didn't eat enough prasadam, you yelled at me last night, Prabhu. I didn't get enough sleep. Isn't there a lot of excuses we have for acting like this? But he's chosen. It's really important to understand that Kaliya is actually chosen to be that way. And I'm going to tell a story about that in a second. And he represents, according to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he represents cunning, malice, cruelty, envy, and pride. Because each of the demons in Krishna's pastimes represent certain things. And also they have a history. It's not that they just, like, became demons. Of course, some of them were devotees who took birth as, you know, who took birth as demons because they wanted to help the Lord in his pastimes, like Haranyaksha, Haranyakashipu, etc., like that. But other ones, they just had, you know, issues before, which they're responsible for. So there's a reason they took birth as demons. I mean, Kaliya, for example, is very, very interesting. His name was Vedashira. He was a sage in his last life. You know, a sage? That doesn't mean the thing you put in your vegetable in your pizza. You know, say parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. You know, like that song, you know, are you coming to... Anyway. Anyone remember that song? No. Yes, I'm in Garfunkel. So... So sage means like he was meditating, but the problem with sages in their ashrams, not all of them, is they become attached to their ashrams, and they start to think, what, it's mine, my ashram. That's why In many cases, the sages will be itinerant sages. Itinerant means they wander. And so they can't be attached. They, just like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would live under a different tree every night. You know, so they, not that they would become attached because they're pure devotees of the Lord, but they would actually, you know, that's one of the standard methods for being detached. Because, you know, every night you get somewhere different to sleep. Some nights you sleep under a tree, and other nights you have a big giant bed. Just like here, in New Taliban, they give us a giant bed. You know, it's big enough. You know, it's so big that I get up and jump on it like a trampoline and everything like that. Do flips. It's good for exercise. Whereas in other places, they just give me just like some straw mat on the ground. So it's hard to get attached. You know, I can't take the giant bed with me. It'd be too expensive to pay the price on the airlines, right? So, even though I might like to. So anyway, the sages, they would travel like that, and they would just have like kopina kanta srito, as described by Srinivasacharya. They have, you know, just basically small clothes, like a small kopina, and then the water pot, like Lord Chaitanya, and the middle of the staff, and that's it, you know. No laptops.
But they had great memories.
Yeah, they didn't need laptops. So they had no laptops and no cell phones and no Blackberries. Nowadays, the Kali Yuga sages like me, you know, they have like Blackberries, iPods, laptops, cell phones.
They have the makeup of lack of mystic powers.
Yeah, lack of mystic powers, credit cards, you know. And, you know, and if you want to pick them up at the airport, they have like 20 bags. You know, you need 3 vans to pick up the sannyasi who arrives. So it's different in Kali Yuga. So anyway, so this sage, this is Vedashira. He was in his ashram, and he was meditating, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, whatever he did. And then this friend of his came, Asvashra. He came and he said, "Hey, Prabhu, friend, bandhu, mitra." He said, "Can I sit down with you and meditate?" And he said to this friend, he was actually a friend, he said, "Hey, this is my ashram. Get your own ashram, rascal." You know, so that's pretty heavy, isn't it? And so his friend the sage did what sages do when they're offended. You know, they pull out their water pot. One of the main reasons you carry the water pot is to curse people. Isn't it? You see in the movies, these Hindi movies, and you know, like the Mahabharata, you know, the sages always take some water and they throw it at someone when they're going to curse.
What do you do nowadays? Just write a nasty email?
And then, yeah, or we break our Brahmin thread. I did that one time. Didn't hurt the person I cursed. But anyway, so they carry around the water pot and they throw the water and you say, "No, don't do it. Don't curse me." And so the sage, he cursed him. He said, "Look, you're envious. You're going to become a snake in your next life. You know, you're envious, proud, you know, violent, all those wonderful characteristics. You're not a sage. You're a sadhu, not sadhu." And sadhu comes from the word sat. Sat means like the eternal. Those who are absorbed in nasato vijate sato. It says the sages, they consider those things that are not eternal to be unreal. That's a verse from Bhagavad Gita. And those things which are eternal to be real. Oh, the doctor. I thought she wasn't coming because she was so shocked with my classes. She's having post-traumatic stress disorder. PTSD, you know. You know, her husband said, "You know, how are you doing? I'm still shocked." Anyway, so so the sages, anyway, so he was cursed to become a snake. So then he remembered to chant Hare Krishna. You know, so I was cursed to become a snake. So he goes, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna." You know, just like if you're cursed, what do? You start chanting, isn't it? I mean, at least that's what I do when I'm cursed. I start chanting very enthusiastically. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So he became so enthusiastic that Lord Vishnu appeared. And that's pretty cool. You know, Lord Vishnu appears when you chant. That means you're chanting pretty seriously. And usually when you get cursed, you do chant pretty seriously. Or when, you know, or like in an automobile accident or something like that. That's the most serious. Just like I remember I was driving, many years ago I was a brahmachari, and a sannyasi was driving the vehicle. And he's one of the worst drivers that ever came in my life. I won't mention his name. You all know him. But anyway, he was driving, and I was scared out of my wits. And he said, "I'm just teaching you how to chant purely." The sannyasi teaches you by his actions as well as his words. Hey, Krishna. It was actually Ridhananda Maharshi. Anyway, so you know how he has a sense of humor like that. You know, he would go around the corner in a van. You know, vans turn over, you know, not a sports car. I go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I said, "See, you're chanting purely now." So you definitely chant purely when you're put in distress. You know, like Yogendra even told me yesterday, he said, this particular person may be an atheist, but when it comes time for the time of death, they'll chant, you know, "Oh my God," or "Hare Krishna," or something like that. Or even you have Gandhi, who said he didn't believe in Krishna. You know, he read Bhagavad Gita, but didn't believe Krishna exists. But at the time of death, he said, "Hey, Ram," like that. He didn't say, "Oh my God." In the movie, the Gandhi movie, they have him saying, "Oh my God." He said, "Ram," at the time of death. You know, so that's, even an atheist says Ram at the time. So anyway, so this guy was chanting purely. And as a result of chanting purely, Lord Vishnu appeared. And he said to Lord Vishnu, "Save me, save me, I don't want to be a snake." And Lord Vishnu said, "Nothing I can do about it. You were cursed. You committed an offense against a devotee. So, you know, I can't mitigate offenses against devotees." Just like Lord Vishnu, he just can't do that. Just like when Maharaj Ambarish was attacked and Durvasa Muni was running away, and Durvasa Muni took shelter of Lord Vishnu says, "Nothing I can do about it." So he said, but then Lord Vishnu thought for a second. He said, "There is something I can do about it. You still have to take birth as a snake, but you know, I'm going to step on your head when you take birth as a snake." Mm-hmm. Nice, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind taking birth as a snake if I get Lord Vishnu to dance on my head. Mm-hmm. Krishna, wouldn't, isn't it? That's pretty cool. So anyway, so Lord Vishnu's dancing. So that's actually the background. And Kaliya represents a lot of other things, you know. In other words, he's responsible for his activities. It's not that he, like in this verse here, Kaliya's just saying, "Don't blame me, you know, I took this body, I'm envious and everything like that, so I get an envious body." So he did it. The reason he took his body is because he did something in his last life. So the same way, the reason we took our body is we did something, or many things, in our past life. And the reason things happen, you know, bad things don't happen to good people and good things don't happen to bad people. Everything's mixed. That's called theodicy. You know, the question of why bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. That's the study of that is called theodicy if you study in religion. So, we did something in the past. That's all. We're responsible. But we can also do something about it right now, too. We can say, you know, I did something in the past, I'm stuck with this body. Because if we take shelter of Krishna's names, we can actually overcome. What does overcome mean? It means we can tolerate the pushings of this body. You got a body, yes, that you're responsible for, that's pushing you in a certain way. Like you may have a body that really likes to eat, for example. You know, like a Kumbhakarna body. You know Kumbhakarna? He was eating so much that the whole universe was threatened. There wasn't enough prasadam for anyone else, even for the cannibals. And so therefore they had to make the arrangement when he asked for benediction. The goddess of learning went on his tongue and made him say Nidra Asana instead of Indra Asana. You understand? In other words, you get the throne of sleep instead of the throne of Indra. Just mispronounces words. You know, sometimes like we mispronounce words, so he did it too. He said, "I want the throne." He was thinking, "I want the throne of Indra." He said, "I want the throne Nindrasana." Oh, I I made a mistake. And then he had to go to sleep, you know, eternally. But by Ravana's helping him in praying to Lord Brahma, he got, you know, one day every 6 months to wake up. So he didn't eat that. You know, he ate a lot that one day, but it wasn't enough to hurt anybody else. So we may have a body, we may have a Kumbhakarna body. Or we may have a Ravana body. You know, Ravana body means we all want to kidnap all the girls, but... Or we may have... What are the problems that people have in their senses? Oh, we may have like a, you know, we want to fight with everybody body. You know, pugilistic body. So you know, actually all of us have bodies that have certain, you know, like weaknesses to them. It's a fact. There's certain weaknesses, I mean, sensory things. Everybody's attracted to something different. You know, one man's food is another man's poison, isn't it? Especially, I think the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. It's not that I think it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it. Isn't it? Like our prasadam prayer says. We used to say the prayer in English, and it was a lot cooler to say it in English because we at least realized what it meant. Isn't it? But nowadays we say it in Bengali, so we don't even think about what it means anymore. So we don't have to take responsibility for the meaning. Anyway, so remember how we used to say these things in English? Of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious, uncontrollable, etc. But you, dear Lord Krishna, has given us this prasadam bhagavat, prasadam to help us control the tongue. So now let us in love call out for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. I mean, it's nicer when you're really thinking about what you're saying. So anyway, so that's the main sense. So that's a real challenge for us, isn't it, controlling the tongue? And actually, if the tongue's uncontrolled, everything else goes out of control, as well as your health, too. That's another issue. But it's so difficult to control the tongue. So, you know, what is the methodology? That's a really interesting point. Like, what is the methodology for controlling the tongue? You know, how do you do it? Because you can't, as we've mentioned many times before, you can't do a negative. You say to someone, control your tongue. What does that mean? I get, put a tongue ring on it? You know, just like, I had one disciple join the movement, she had a tongue ring on her tongue. And I said, well, to control your tongue, we'll just put a chain on it. That wouldn't work, you know. Or I said, I asked her jokingly, I said, you know, what happens when you eat spaghetti? Does it get entangled in it? She eventually took it out. But, you know, so is that how you control the tongue? I mean, just like you control an oxen, not through a tongue ring, but, you know, a nose ring like that. Some of the oxen have nose rings. So, no. I mean, you can't do a negative. I mean, when you tell people, control your senses, how do you do that? Just like if you tell a child, let's say a child is finger painting on the walls. They do that sometimes. And you say, don't finger paint on the walls. Okay. What about the ceiling? What about the floor? What about all the books you have on your shelf? Okay, don't do the books. And then you got to go, don't. You're going to be doing don't ad infinitum, you know. Forever. So it's better to do a do than to do a don't, because you can't do a don't. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's impossible to do a don't. Like, control your senses. Yeah, it's like a don't, which means basically don't let your senses go out of control. So, you know, you really can't control the tongue. It's impossible. But if you engage the tongue, seva mukehi jivado swayame visparachita, in Krishna's service, not only eating prasadam, I mean, because you can also eat prasadam. Prabhupada said many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasadam. That's a quote from Prabhupada. You can also, like, overeat prasadam, too. I hate to tell you that. Even though we joined the movement and they told us, you're supposed to fill yourself up to your neck and then a few drops after that. And we followed that instruction very nicely. More than we chant Hare Krishna nicely or do anything else nicely in the movement. And we used to roll on the ground in pain after every Sunday feast. You experienced that, didn't you? You said, oh, I overdosed on prasadam.
I don't think I rolled around in pain, but they couldn't get me in the kitchen. I'd sneak off and go to sleep somewhere.
Yeah, but I rolled in pain. We would always quote from Prabhupada, where Prabhupada said, if you're having pain because you overeat, lay on your left side, not your right side. Because your right side has, you know, your liver and gallbladder, and that's the painful side. For those of you interested in medical things. So you're supposed to lay on your left side if you're actually overeating. It's, I remember laying on the stairs in the Gainesville Temple, you know, in 1971. And then Ridananda Maharaj, she was married at that time, but he said, I want to go up the stairs. And I said, I can't move. It was almost like that Hanuman story where, you know, Bhim Sen Crane came across Hanuman in the Himalayas, you know, I want to move monkey. And I said, I can't move. You'll have to move me. I mean, it was so intense eating prasadam. So anyway, so it was good. Well, it lasted. But anyway, I probably would be dead now if I continued the same way. So the point is, and yes, I mean, we have all these quotes, and maybe it's good for new devotee yet to eat like that. But Prabhupada said, you know, also the nectar instruction says the same thing, you know. Achahara, prayasascha, pajalpa, niyamagraha, you know, overeating, over-endeavoring, talking nonsense, all these things are impediments in devotional service, lead to deviation from devotional service. So we can control the tongue. I think by speaking more about Krishna and having some positive objective. See, the problem is, insofar as controlling the mind and tongue and everything, all the senses in general, is we don't think of what our sankalpa is when we're doing our activities, what we're trying to accomplish, in other words. A sankalpa means your objective. Just like if you have a marriage ceremony, you always have a sankalpa before it. Sankalpa means, you know, today we were gathered on the fifth day of the moon in the holy land of Mississippi and, you know, wherever, you know, gives the time, place, circumstance, and everything like that. You've done marriages, right? You know what I mean. That's called a sankalpa, to perform a marriage. So that's part of any Vedic sacrifice as a sankalpa, you know, declare the purpose. So we just don't, in other words, we don't have any goals, practically speaking. We just like, oh, we're doing this, why my morning program? Because, you know, I'm supposed to do it. That's not a goal orientation, that's just have to, supposed to, which is not really exciting. And then you attend, then you put your body on automatic. Which is like, oh yeah, it reminds me of when someone was flying a plane. It was interesting. There was a commercial air flight recently that was going to Hawaii, and the pilots put it on automatic, the plane on automatic. They always do. They always put the plane on automatic pilot. I mean, I used to fly a plane. We always did that. But at this particular juncture, the pilots fell asleep. And the plane went way past Hawaii. And, you know, the ground controllers were calling, okay, American Airlines flight, you know, whatever the flight number is. Where are you? You're flying too far. And they didn't hear any response. They didn't hear that. But, I mean, obviously, you can't respond on the radio if you're sleeping. So the flight just, like, kept flying. Fortunately, they woke up, you know, after a while. Huh? Where are we? Huh? Oh, we missed Hawaii. Let's turn around. So they turned around. And they landed safely, fortunately, because they could have run out of fuel or something like that, which is absolute disaster. You know, it's amazing the passengers didn't notice, because you do notice, you have these little screens now in the airplanes that tell you where you are. So sometimes we do that in devotional service. We put our body on automatic. Like we mentioned the other day, you know, please wake me up when my japa's done. You know, they're moving the counter beads down after each round. It's just put everything. So we go, everything's on automatic. So no wonder we're not enthusiastic. No wonder we can't control our senses, because we don't have some exciting goal. Now, of course, the most exciting goal is you become Krishna conscious and you be with Krishna in the spiritual world, right? That's exciting. But let's say we don't even have that goal. You know, we're not that advanced yet. Then we have to have some goal for Krishna that we're trying to accomplish. Like if you're trying to build a new temple for Krishna, you know, something, everybody should have some particular goal, an educational goal, preaching goal, book distribution goal. But we all have different natures. Like Prabhupada said in the beginning, one becomes attached to the service. That's the first thing. You understand? It's an interesting statement. And then Prabhupada said, ultimately, one just becomes attached to the point of loving Krishna. But, you know, we may not be advanced enough in that stage, so we have to pick some particular service that really excites us. It's a challenge. What do they say? When one stops learning, one starts dying. So in other words, if you don't have a challenge in your life, then, you know, really you do start dying at that point. I mean, dying, maybe not literally, but literally may also occur. You don't have anything exciting to look forward to. You don't wake up the next morning excited. If you're not waking up in the morning excited about what you're going to be doing that day, you got to change something in your life. I'm not speaking about doing something adharmic, you know. I mean, really, I'm excited about going to the bar so that, you know, I have to change the regulative principles to suit my, you know, nature. You know, because I'm a Shudra by nature, I'm supposed to engage in, you know, mode of ignorance activities, so this will make me excited to get some ganja. You know, people pronounce this word ganga. Ganga is the Ganges, and ganja is this thing you smoke. Anyways. So you really need some goals, right? You know, so adjust your life. I mean, whether it means like farming, like if someone's taking care of the bees, you know, that's exciting to that person. You know, he said, wow, I'm going to increase. Actually, Prabhupada always wanted increases too, which is interesting. Prabhupada didn't want just stagnant thing, you know. So let's say if you're engaged in the beekeeping, you know, I'm going to increase my hives. You understand? I'm going to do this. Or if I'm, you know, if I'm here at the temple, we're going to build a guest house. You know, it's plans like that. These are practical things. I'm not saying that's for everybody, the same plans fit everybody. No, the same shoes don't fit everybody, and the same plans don't fit everybody. But one has to have something that they look forward to. If they're not looking forward to it, I'm going to be a pure devotee, like I said, which is really elevated stuff to look forward to. But look forward to, oh, I'm going to dress the deities. I really, you know, pick these nice flowers out this morning. There's a new outfit I'm going to make for the deities. I mean, there's so many things according to your nature that can excite you. If you are not excited in Krishna consciousness, you got to change, adjust, think of something, strategize, have a vision statement, a strategic planning mission statement, or something you got to do to get yourself excited. And like I said, the test of excitement is you're waking up in the morning and you feel like, wow, I want to get up. Now, if you're waiting, now the alarm clock rings in the morning, you're thinking, oh, what is that song? Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, oh. You know that song? No one's heard that song. You've heard it? It pretty much dates me. You know, I'm older than the rest of you. You know, you were, you know, when I was born, you were still teenagers in your last life. So,
year
of your birth. 1905. A raw food diet does wonders for you. But
I was born in 52. I mean.
Really? No, I was born in 49, seriously. But anyway, so but the point is, you know, if you're thinking that, oh, I hate to get up in the morning, that stupid alarm clock, or they get these alarm clocks now with the snooze thing feature on them, yeah. You hit it and it gives you 10 more minutes. Hit it, it gives you another 15 minutes. And then you have to get a super loud alarm clock. I remember there was one person that had an alarm clock. I actually talked to them, you know. It played Reveille, you know, Reveille. And the person still didn't get up, and he was staying in a room right next to me, and it was driving me crazy to hear the alarm go off like that for 15 minutes. So my experience, you know, this is a practical suggestion, is get something that you really like to do. And goal oriented. You know, something in the future you're achieving, you're learning, you're doing for the deities, you're growing for the, you know, growing the vegetables or something, and increase it all the time. Like Prabhupada wanted book distribution always increased, didn't he?
Yeah.
He said double it. Prabhupada wasn't sad. No one ever, you know, saw Prabhupada. You know, so you go to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, you say, Prabhupada, I did this, and Prabhupada said, oh, you're so nice, now you can rest, let's just enjoy life. I mean, where do you hear Prabhupada ever saying that? Prabhupada might say, take a day of rest, and then, you know, go out again. But, you know, Prabhupada, there's, a devotee is not satisfied. He has to always be greedy to do more and more for Krishna. And that, according to your psychophysical nature, don't try to do something that's not your psychophysical nature, because you're not going to be enthusiastic about it. You know, ascertain yourself. Because even Arjuna, who is a pure devotee of the Lord, was advised by Krishna, don't try to act contrary to your psychophysical nature, because you're going to be forced to fight anyway. Right? I mean, Arjuna, at one point, he tried to meditate. This is a whole story. He was meditating like this and trying to be like a nice meditator, because he wanted to go to the heavenly planets to get weapons. That's a nice reason to meditate. Anyway, so he was meditating, and then a big boar, that doesn't mean a boring person, but a pig, came to attack him. And he shot his arrow at the boar. At the same time, this Kurata, you know, a hunter, low-class hunter, shot an arrow at the boar. And Arjuna said, you know, even though he was trying to be a meditator, he said, my arrow hit first. And the hunter said, no, it didn't. And so Arjuna, he started a fight with the hunter over which arrow came first. And even he started to wrestle, as described, as he was wrestling with the hunter, because he couldn't defeat the hunter, because the hunter was Lord Shiva. There were sparks flying between the two bodies. So here was, he tried to meditate and he just kept fighting. And Krishna says that in the Gita to Arjuna too. By your nature, you're going to be forced to fight. So we're given a particular type of body. Of course, as I said in the beginning class, we don't use the body as an excuse to have uncontrolled senses. But we recognize what the body is best in doing. What the body, you know, how we'll be enthusiastic in doing certain things. I mean, certain things I wouldn't be enthusiastic in doing. You know, if you just told me to be a typist all day long, you take dictation and type, I mean, it would drive me crazy. I mean, I'd be reaching for the Prozac, practically speaking, after some time. Maybe not, but anyway, I mean, it would drive me bananas. So, you know, I have my life I'm very excited about. So everyone should do that. So that's, anyway, that's the message. Then you can conquer the senses, because that's, then you have a higher taste. Like Prabhupada said, when your cup is full of milk, there's no room for ink. Remember that? So when you're, or Prabhupada said also, idle mind is what? A devil's workshop. So if your mind is engaged, Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayo, that's the whole point. That not just the body, it's not that when the body is engaged, you're fully engaged. When the mind is engaged, you're fully engaged. Even if the body is disabled, but if your mind is engaged, you're fully engaged in Krishna's service. Because the Prabhupada said devotional service is executed with the subtle body. Remember that. Then it's devotional service. If your body is just doing something and your mind is not, that is karma yoga. Bhakti yoga starts with when the mind is engaged in serving Krishna, along with the body. Of course, it's not that you, my mind is serving Krishna, Prabhu, don't ask me to do anything. You know, that's another excuse I hear all the time. You know, the devotee is just like, you know, spaced out, and you say, you know, can you do some service? He said, no, you don't understand, I'm serving internally, you know. But, you know, so I think, so, or sometimes people from other religions say that, you know, I love the Lord, it doesn't matter what I do. You ever hear that before? I love the Lord, therefore it doesn't matter what I do. So the whole point is somehow or other engage your mind in Krishna's service. The senses come automatically under control. And even if you have a body or a situation like Kaliya here that's envious, proud, and whatever, you know, has that inclination, it won't affect you. You'll be vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pashta vegam. You'll be tolerating the pushings of the body. Because that's what Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Instruction. One who tolerates these things, he's qualified to be guru, right? Doesn't say they go away. It's not that when you become Krishna conscious that your body becomes like Novocaine all over the place. You know Novocaine? That's what the dentist gives you when they, you know, they pull the teeth and it doesn't hurt. It still hurts, actually. But not as much, yeah. I prefer general anesthesia. Because then you wake up and it's all done, right? So So anyway, so it's not like the pushings go away, but your consciousness is so high and absorbed in something else that you're not influenced by the pushings. You're not. That's what it means to tolerate the pushings, that you're not influenced. All right. So I think that's enough for today. Any questions or comments or arguments or problems? Yeah.
I don't remember exactly where it is, but when you said about controlling your mind and the senses,
could you speak to someone about it?
I'll translate.
I don't remember exactly where it is, but I seem to remember in Bhagavad Gita, when Srila Prabhupada is explaining about controlling the mind, and he said, the best training for the mind is to think of the welfare of others.
Yeah.
Also engage it in the story.
Yeah, exactly.
I've
read that too. Yes, the best training is to think of the welfare of others and to engage in some activity to help others. And that's not the exact quote, but that's what Prabhupada said. That's not verbatim, but that's the essence of what Prabhupada said. So, yes, the Sankirtan movement. So what that means is that not everybody can do direct Sankirtan, but do something that contributes to it. Like you're doing collecting money or... dressing the deities and that's also part of the Sankirtan movement. Because people come and, I'm seeing the deities Radharada Kanta, and I'm becoming enthusiastic. It enthuses me in my service by seeing how beautiful they're dressed. How beautifully they're dressed. And encourages me, encourages all the devotees. And attracts people who are not in the Krishna consciousness movement. So that's also Sankirtan. Everything is meant for Sankirtan in the movement. So we should be thinking, that's also Bhagavat Vidhi, we should actually be thinking of helping others. And, as I mentioned, I might have mentioned last night when I was talking about the Govardhan Project, that when you see the people there who need that sort of help, you naturally feel an impulse to help them. That's a sign of, the sign of spiritual advancement, one sign, in addition to being attached to the holy names, is that compassion becomes an integral part of your psychology. You understand? It's not that you have to think of being compassionate. It's just automatically there. That you automatically think, how can I help? Before that, when one's first starting Krishna consciousness, you exhibit compassion because your spiritual master told you to be compassionate. Why am I going in Sankirtan? Because Prabhupada told me. It pleases him, which is good. This is good. But that's like the Vaidhi Bhakti stage of compassion. You understand Vaidhi Bhakti as compared to Raghunuga Bhakti? So the compassion has Vaidhi Bhakti and a Raghunuga stage too. So when one advances further, it becomes spontaneous. Yes, I'm doing this to please my spiritual master. But at the same time, this is like an impulse that's coming from my heart that I can't control to help these people. And you see that, actually, if you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you'll find this mood there. Like Prabhupada is just like intensely, especially the lectures in 1966, the first ones that are recorded, you'll find an intensity in Prabhupada's like reaching out to people, that it's amazing. In the Bhagavad Gita lecture, you've heard some of the tapes or CDs or MP3s. That Prabhupada has like this extreme intensity. And that intensity is his prasadam, mercy. I know it's prasadam is mercy, I'm speaking in Sanskrit. But that intensity is his mercy, his compassion. You understand? He's just reaching out. I gotta get these people, I gotta get them. I gotta bring them to Krishna consciousness. And you hear this in Prabhupada's, in all the Prabhupada's, even later on you hear this in Prabhupada's lectures, that the impetus behind Prabhupada giving the lectures is not enjoyment, his own personal enjoyment, but an intense desire to help the people who he's speaking to. That's why Prabhupada's lectures are generally on the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Because he's thinking, what do these people need? I have to bring them to Krishna. They need to hear they're not the body. Of course, he knows he's not the body already. I mean, he knows what his relationship is with Krishna in the spiritual world. We don't. So Prabhupada is giving the lecture for our benefit. So we can actually hear this in the tone, in the mood of Prabhupada's lectures, this spontaneous compassion, Raghunuga compassion. And that's also a sign that someone's on the Raghunuga Bhakti platform. They're synonymous, or they're connected, I'm sorry. They're very much connected. If one has Raganuga compassion, then he's ready for Raganuga bhakti. You understand the difference? Anyway, that was my one realization I had. And that's you can see if you're actually advancing, that if you're still stone-hearted when you see people who are not Krishna conscious or people suffering, you haven't made much advancement. But if tears come from your eyes like they did to Prabhupada's eyes when you see people suffering, that means the beginning, you're actually making spiritual advancement. You're soft-hearted. And when you see not just some people suffering or some entities suffering, but any entity suffering. Like if you see an ant suffering, a devotee feels compassion for the ant. Or even a cockroach. Like this morning in the shower, there was a spider this big. Maybe not that big, but anyway. He was this big. He was. And I was thinking, how can I be compassionate? At the same time, I was scared to death. I said, what if he bites me? So that's a challenge, when you see. You ever seen a spider that big?
Yeah, they have them.
I've seen it. He was in my shower with me. So I was taking a shower, I was getting ready for Mangalarti. But anyway. All right, anyway, so, yeah. The sage that became Kaliya was named Vedashira.
Vedashira. It's a really good story.
But there's a story about each demon, actually. And Bhakti, I can give you a whole file which tells you each demon who they were before.
I like that.
Like Putana, for example. I think you know this story. I told it before. Mm-hmm. She was Bali Maharaj's sister. And when Lord Vamana came, she didn't know what he was up to, first of all. She just thought, here's this cute little boy. I'd love to be his mother. And she was praying, I want to be his mother, I want to be his mother. But then when she saw the rascaldom that he did, he took away everything from her brother as a rascal. Krishna takes away everything. So anyway, when she saw that, she said, I want to kill him. If I'm his mother in the future, I want to kill him too. So she had that, mixed mood. So that was her desire. I want to be his mother, but I want to kill him. Or try to kill him. And so therefore, she appeared as Putana. And she got to be Krishna's mother, and she got to try to kill Krishna, too, simultaneously, isn't it? And, of course, she got purified of the killing business. And then that... Eddie, so many interesting stories about people's past lives. Like Kubja, she was Sarpanaka in her past life. Did you know that? Sarpanaka fell in love with Lord Ramchandra, only she had to have an operation, the poor girl. Certain parts of her body removed by that Lakshman person. But she was in love. So it was mixed. She was in love and she hated simultaneously. So as a result, she took birth as Kubja, and she got her desires fulfilled and purified by Krishna. Kubja, the hunchback lady in Mathura. So there's so many nice stories about who demons or personalities were in their past lives. Bhaktivinoda Thakura talks a lot about this. And, I have computer files, detailing all the past lives. What the demon also indicates something. Each demon indicates something. Each demon indicate like who was that demon? Anyway, I forget the name. I forget the demons. But was it Aristasura or Palambasura? Oh, it's Palambasura. Yeah, Palambasura, of course, was a coward boy. He acted like a coward boy. Remember that story?
Yeah.
And he stole Balaram away. So he represents the bogus guru. The Satyasai. Bogus of this world. So he represents bogus gurus, isn't it? The cheating mentality of bogus gurus. So it's really interesting that the demons really did exist, but they also represent some particular anartha or some particular type of personality. Dainikasura, the ass-like mentality he represents of a burden, you know, like someone who just works real hard and just like comes like an ass. You have attachment to fruitive activities. You remember, I gave a class on that once, yeah. Or something like that. You know, like ass, you know, load-bearing ass, like you see in India. I mean, the asses are really asses in India. Because you'll see, one time I was seeing like a whole, like a giant pile of straw moving down the street. And I said, how is it moving? And then I looked at it, it had little legs underneath, and it was an ass. And the straw was like 10 times taller than the ass. So yeah, when you go to India, you understand Prabhupada's examples a little better. Because in America, you just think ass. You know what's an ass? You know, jackass. You know, you know it's a funny word, but you don't really relate to it as much as you do when you go to India and see what an ass is doing. Yeah.
Who was Dainikasura in the previous birth?
I forget right now. Maybe someone remembers. I told the story. Some sort of. Anyway, I don't remember. I mean, it's a lot of different details, and I don't remember all the different personalities. But if anyone's interested, I can send in the computer file that details all this, so you'll know that. Yeah, just send me a letter to remind me, and I'll send them a computer file with the names of all the demons and the who they were in their past lives and who they represent.
Yes, Vidvigorila.
What?
Did Vidgorila used to be a devotee?
He was a devotee. Yeah. As far as his past life, in the same life, he was a servant of Lord Ramchandra. You know, we don't have to worry about his past life. He associated with Hanuman and Sugriva, and he helped conquer Lanka. He was one, did Vidgorila and Mainda. They were actually devotees. But they had bad association. You know, when you're a gorilla, it's not hard to have bad association. Hang out with the other gorillas. And then, so anyway, yeah?
Guru Maharaj, is it true, I'm just asking, that where Taliban forest was where Dainikasura was killed? And so is it also true that, you know, the place is named after these forests, that particular Anartha is prominent? I mean, we have to try and overcome all our Anarthas.
In Braj, there's no Anarthas prominent.
Okay.
But you can work on your Anartha at that particular place, or you can work on your Anartha now. You don't have to wait to go to... Oh, and you think that Anartha is present here in New Taliban?
No, I'm asking whether...
that would be politically incorrect.
No.
No, I don't think... No, Prabhupada did not call New Taliban because that Anartha was present. I'm sure of that. I mean, even though it would be politically incorrect for me to say yes, but...
Because it was nice fruits growing.
You know, probably because it reminded him of Taliban. You know, why did Prabhupada call New Vrindavan, New Vrindavan? You know, New Taliban, New Vrindavan, New Gokul, New Goloka. You know, so it's... I mean, so many demons appeared in different... No, Taliban was not only the place... Here's the interesting story, where Balaram killed Dainikasura. Balaram actually killed Dainikasura. But it was the place where they had the most tasty fruits... So maybe that's a message for you all. You should engage in some agriculture and grow some fruits. So next time I come, there's something to eat. So poor Maharani doesn't have to go to the supermarket to buy everything. We should eat things that are grown here. That would be a real great thing to come here, isn't it?
Yeah.
And everything on the plate is from New Taliban.
Yeah.
Instead, now everything is from Sam's or Walmart, isn't it? Whole Foods, sorry. Where the sound? Well, it was grown at Whole Foods store. It's natural, organic. And, you know, organic things, I tell you, you know, it's not something nice when you have organic food. I'll tell you why, because you know how it's grown? What they do is they take the cow manure. Yes, they use cow manure from the slaughterhouses and the places where cows are actually mistreated and put it over their fields. There's also a lot of chicken manure and everything like that. You know, organic, you think organic means Mary Poppins or something like that.
Also, they use bone meal.
Bone meal, yeah, I forgot about that one. They use bone meal from from animals, cows, and fish. They also grind up fish. So, you know, so it's better to grow our own. It's healthy. Prabhupada said the Didi should be served food that's actually grown on the farm. And Krishna will like that more. It tastes better, too. Yeah.
Nature. When I moved into my house, we had those little roaches that live inside the house.
And they eat them, yeah.
Roaches, and no matter what I did, I couldn't get rid of them. And there was a little devotee girl from down the road visiting my children, and there was a spider in the kitchen, and I killed it. And she was mortified. She said, "Why would you ever kill a spider?" And I really felt so bad, and I never killed the spider deliberately again after that, and they ate every little roach. I have little spiders in the corners and no roaches.
Did they offer the roaches before they ate them?
It must be.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's one thing about if an animal is dangerous, we can identify it as dangerous to a human being, then it's all right to kill that animal. Actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur quoted that verse when Prabhupada was thinking about the whole thing, that, you know, like a snake that's, you know, poisonous or something like that can be killed because it's dangerous to a human being. Yeah. Yogi?
We usually have one or two representatives on the plate that were grown here.
Good.
I've sent blueberry juice and sugar snap peas and cabbage, and my mom had pecans and
something. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we had some things, and also the those berries. What are they called again?
Blueberries.
No, they weren't blueberries. They were blackberries. Dewberries.
And also the citrus, those citrus
things.
Oh, the kumquats, the ones I love. So, yeah, so, but it would be nice to have everything. And eventually, like we were driving on the road yesterday, and we saw all these people with these interesting root cellars. They took these storage shed, you know, storage things. They were, I guess, containers, like shipping containers, and put them underground. And it wouldn't take much to do something like that. And they had these giant root cellars. So
did you see that tomorrow?
Everywhere in the road. Yogendra was showing me, and I saw a lot of them, isn't it? They just built them into the hillsides or covered them with mounds of dirt. And, you know, it would just be nice eventually just to be living with what's available here. I mean, you know, and actually Prabhupada said that's what you should be offering to the deities, things that are in season and grown locally. Prabhupada even said that. Instead of like shipping in mangoes from Malaysia or something like that. So, then whatever you have.
But, I mean, then you have the cooks and
adjust.
The employees have to adjust to that. You know?
Yeah, and that's a hard thing. And that's one of the problems I have in North Carolina, is that the devotees who are cooking, they make their menu up based upon what they want rather than what's cheap at the market. Because we don't grow everything there, obviously. And so I tell them, and they don't listen, of course.
Yeah, like, I don't know how cauliflower became so popular.
I tell them, first of all, you see what's available in season. Then you make your menu up. But obviously they don't listen. They have it reversed. They make the menu up. And then even if cauliflower costs $100 a case,
they buy cauliflower. The greens will sit there.
Yeah, the greens will sit there. I mean,
they say, too, that people, the food that they eat comes so many hundreds and thousands of miles away from where they live that you know, increases your carbon footprint also.
And also, it's not that healthy for you. It's healthier to eat food that's grown locally in season, you know, the type of food that's grown locally. Krishna has arranged everything, so the food that grows in season is the right food for you, health-wise. You know, it's just the right thing. Like, you know, watermelons come out when it's hot as hell outside. They don't come out in the middle of the winter. You know, Krishna is very kind. You know, he arranges things that way. I guess except if you're in the North Pole, then you got real problems. Because nothing grows.
Well, the demoniac birds, you know, they eat that whale blubber.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're a devotee of the North Pole, you got problems.
Really?
You can't eat blubber. Okay, I think we have to end because we got some things to do. So thank you very much. It's been a nice visit to Nutella. We're going back to New Orleans, the source of birth for all of you. Right? No? You were born in Nutella?
I was born in Minnesota.
Haridwani, you were born in Nutella? Oh, Minnesota.
My real birth.
Well, Minnesota is a very warm climate place. Really?